So welcome to our July 2019 case study call. It's hard for me to believe that it's already the seventh month of the year. It just has flown by. It's summer. It's the heat of it. It's the thick of it, especially you guys in, along with me in the southern part of the country. And even Lynn said it was in the 90s by her. Yeah. So it's summer. Yay. So we had a good turnout for last month. We had nobody submitting case studies. This month we had four, but Karen and Cassandra, I don't see Cassandra on. I don't know if she's on just there, but they submitted it by the deadline. So they get preference. So we're going to go Karen first and then Cassandra. And then Mahala and Angelica tried to sneak in sometime today because Lynn said to me, oh, there's two cases. And I went in and I went, no, there's four cases. So we'll do our best to try to do it. And I wanted everybody to know when you're submitting cases, it's a great way for you to learn and everybody to learn. So I'm not going to just sit there and tell you this is this and this is this and this is this. We're going to explore together so that we can have, you know, get the wheels turning and get your thought processes thinking the same way my thought processes think, or maybe better, like, you know, hopefully better, right? I don't want to wish my thought processes on anybody, but I'm just saying, you know, I tend to, my mind is like all this thing and it goes, bling. So I want to teach you, you know, what my thought processes are with this. Now, all four of the cases happen to be either the person or a person's family member, because I recognize yours, Karen, who I've known since she was five, maybe. Yeah. And Cassandra's had the same last name, a younger version. So I don't know if it's a niece or a cousin or whatever, but we'll find out. So I'm going to do Karen's first. If Cassandra's not on, then I'll go to Mahala's and then Angelica's. But understand that we may not make it through, because I just don't want to stay here till 11 o'clock tonight doing cases. Okay. It's just not in anybody's best interest. All right. So just make sure that's known, but you will get first priority on the next one. And if it's short, if you don't have like a zillion labs, I think you had a zillion labs. I looked, you had a lot of labs. I didn't look at yours carefully. Angelica, I didn't get down that far. And there's Cassandra.
No labs.
So if they're easy like that, and if they're ones with lots of labs, if they're easy ones without labs, then it's something we could probably talk about on just a general call. But when they have all those labs, I really do think it's such a great learning opportunity for everybody to carefully go through that. So hi, Cassandra. So good to see you. It's been a while.
I know, a long time.
Long time. Cool. So yours was the second one in. So we're going to do Karen's and then yours. And then whatever time we have left for Mahala's and Angelica's. All right. All right. So Karen, I'm going to bring up your case. Let me see which one was yours. This one. Okay. I'll go backwards to go forwards. That was Mahala's. Okay. I'm going to go back to Karen's.
I have a little more information on that too.
Oh, good. Yeah. So because I was hoping you did, because I had questions. All right. So I'll share my screen. Let me just make this smaller so I could see you guys on the one side. All right, good. And then I'll move this over here. And then I'll say share screen. And we'll share this. I love these new forms. I don't know about you, Lynn, but we've been using those others for a long time. And I'm just, this I really, really like. It makes it really easy to see everything in a much better way than the mock form was doing. Okay, so we have a, from Karen, we have a female age 27, 5'1", 103 pounds. So certainly not overweight and, you know, not really underweight either, just really ideal weight. She manages a nonprofit. She's in a committed relationship with no children. Did I hear she's getting married?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you didn't tell me that. Somebody else told me that. And I'm like, really? I didn't know that. Very cool. Congratulations. When is that? Mm-hmm. When?
August.
Oh, how exciting. Okay. So her problem is gallbladder pain that comes and goes, but always appears when eating fat. And if she presses on it or lays on her right side, she gets constant, or that's when it hurts. And she has constant bloating and pain after eating, nausea if more than 5 or 6 hours between meals. So here's what I want to ask whenever we hear this. So first of all, When did it first start? How long ago?
Well, and the thing is, like, she did say it was after eating. So really it's worse after eating, but it's constantly bloated now.
She feels a constant, okay.
Yeah, and it started like a year ago, April. And she did go to the doctor in, well, actually March, I think. And then she went to the doctor in April.
Okay, and that's when he said, he did the ultrasound, saw a polyp?
Yeah, but said that shouldn't cause that pain.
And what was there? Did they have any explanation for what it was other than wanting to just put her on medication or whatever?
No, they just said come back in 6 months and get another ultrasound. They're just going to watch it. And she didn't do it, but now she made an appointment for July.
To go and get it checked again. So whenever something comes on, so it's been about a little over a year, like a year and a half, right? Not even a year and a half, a year and a couple of months. So I always want to asking what was going on right before that? Because I know the concussion she had was several years ago, right? So right. It wasn't like, immediate post-concussion. So what was happening in her life in terms of travel, in terms of anything different, moving into a new place, getting new carpeting, a flood?
Just they had a lot of stress with her job, and it was about the same time this year where it flared up again. It just kind of went away, not totally, but it was tolerable. And then they have an event every year and she's in charge of it, and it was really stressful.
Okay. And it flared up. Mm-hmm. Does she remember ever told you when was the very first time she noticed this pain?
No, she just said it was around that event.
Okay. And did she notice anything? And this is some questions to ask her, and you said you had some additional information, so I want to get that. Has she ever noticed pain and bloating after eating in the past?
No.
So this is the first thing, right?
Right. But she had traveled. She had been vegan, and she had traveled to Japan and started eating fish. And so she still eats fish maybe once or twice a month.
When did she do the travel to Japan?
It wasn't right before that. It was like the January before that.
And was she eating raw fish?
Probably, yes. She had sushi.
Okay, so here's one possibility that she got some sort of parasite, right, from the raw fish. So that's one possibility. What we're trying to do is look for clues, right? How do we figure out what caused this? So we have, one is that, two, stress, right? And she's, she wants to do a good job. She tends to be a little stressed, to begin with, right? So that's that combination. So, and the event happened when?
April.
Okay, so she traveled in January, and then in April the event, and in April was when this pain started, right, during the event?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over a year ago.
Over a year ago, but that's the first incident she had. Yeah, and that's when she went to the doctor in April. She started in March. Okay. So I want to just explain what I'm doing here in terms of, from a learning experience. I really think it's important to create timelines. And people don't think it through in terms of that. So here's where, you can take a piece of paper when you're taking notes, and you can put, this is where the pain started. And then you can start to ask them what was happening in these months, even years beforehand, that could be leading up. And were there some signs that this was something was going out of balance? So it's really a good thing to do. And we actually have a form that you can use to fill that out. It's a timeline thing. Okay. And so then you said that did she do anything in that time period where you said, and then it got better, but not 100% gone?
No, she got so frustrated with her job, she just kind of didn't care anymore. So that was less stress.
Okay, and how long after it started in back in whatever that was, May, March or so, 2018, when did it start to get better?
She did say a couple, like a the next month or two.
So she had really bad pain for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And some of you mentioned some supplements. Did she start supplements in that time period?
Yes. She in April, right after she went to the doctor, we got her, from her blood work, we could see that her zinc was low and magnesium, and we started her on digestive enzymes.
Okay. And then it seemed to get better somehow after that. Does she still take all of that?
She stopped taking all that. And then when this started, except she was still taking the magnesium. And she stopped all the rest. And then she started again, the digestive enzymes, when this started again.
And if you could, I don't know if you've asked her this, but rate the pain, the bloating, the discomfort right now on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put it? Where would she put it? So these are good things to ask, because when we're looking at comparison, so it was a 10 when it first started, and then after she started taking this stuff, it went to an 8, and then to a 6, and then she was kind of living with a 6. You know what I'm saying? It just helps to know the variations, like what is the magnitude of the up, down, you know, increase, decrease type of stuff. Okay.
She doesn't notice a difference with the digestive enzymes.
And how does she know that if she took them for a while with the other stuff? So she doesn't notice an immediate difference is what you mean, right? She doesn't like take them and then, okay.
Well, compared to not taking them.
Compared to, you mean over a period of time?
But she's still, I guess, I don't know why she keeps taking them if she...
Okay. So, you said you had some additional, so this I think we already talked about. She's, limits fatty foods, started taking magnesium, zinc, body ecology, liver mend, which is all that good stuff. That was just recently for a week. Didn't notice the difference, but the stools are now black and
she's taking the Livermand again.
So she started taking that again. Was she taking that last year?
Yes. When all this started, she wasn't taking them when they started.
I'm gonna mute someone. I think it's Angelica.
If you want to make me a call, I can look at that.
I'm trying to find my thing. The little, I can't find it. Oh, there it is. It's up there. Okay, I'm going to make you a co-host. All right. There's Lynn. Okay. I'll make you a co-host, and then you can mute whoever's there. All right. Okay. So
she started taking the Livermand after she went to the doctor, and then she started again when it started flaring up again this year.
How long did she take the Livermand?
I'm not really sure, because she still had, she had ordered it a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. She took it for an extended, she didn't just take it for a week or two.
Right.
And then she started again.
Yes.
Okay.
Her stools are different after she just took a week of that complete gallbladder complete.
Is that also body ecology?
No.
Is that the Seeking Health one?
No, it's just called, it's from Complete.
Oh, Complete. Okay, got it.
But that's all the ingredients I listed.
Okay. Body, okay, and then digestive enzymes, gallbladder complete, and that has the apple cider vinegar and all the other stuff in it. And it's after that she started to get the stools black and thin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and she says stinky.
And stinky. Well, on the one hand, it could be moving things through, right? When you see that happening, it could be causing some, you know, the foul smell as it's moving things through. Or it could be just some things. It's got some sulfur things in it, like garlic and milk thistle and NAC. I mean, it looks like it's got decent stuff in it. All right. So currently, she's taking the zinc and the magnesium and the digestive enzymes?
She's not taking zinc. She said she would get some and start taking it.
She would what?
She's going to get some and start taking it. But she's taking the digestive enzymes and the magnesium and the Livamend.
Okay. Have you tested her D?
No. She tries. We should do that. I mean, that's one of the things she needs to ask for when she goes.
And what about iron? Because I know in the past she's had trouble with some iron deficiency.
I didn't test it. We didn't, you know, I didn't even know she was going to the doctor and they didn't test it, but I was going to ask them to test that this time.
Okay. If you have her labs, run them through the blood chemistry.
Yeah, I did.
You did? Because you didn't attach it, so.
It was from a year ago.
Oh, it was from a year ago. So she hasn't had anything recently.
No, she's going in July.
Okay. So all she's had for testing has just been some blood tests.
And that ultrasound.
And the ultrasound. Okay. And they didn't see stones or sludge in the liver or anything like that. Nothing looked enlarged, just what looked like a polyp. Did they say where the polyp was? Like if it was near the common bile duct or was it, you know, and it was on the gallbladder? You're saying yes. On the gallbladder. Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time with thinking that a polyp on a small organ like the gallbladder, on a small person like her, would not cause some pain and dysfunction. And she notices it's worse when she eats fats.
Yes.
Looks like she works out, she walks, but she does have some troubles with stress, right? Corn chips 2 or 3 times a week. And that's her worst food, corn chips 2 or 3 times a week. She do it out of stress? Is that like a
stress? I think she goes, like she snacks while she makes dinner.
Okay. All right. Okay. So what was the additional information you have?
Her periods are like since October. Have been like inconsistent, and she hasn't lost weight. She's actually 2 pounds heavier. I would think she would, you know, limiting her food, she would lose some weight, but she's gained a couple pounds. And she's gotten acne since December or January, and she has joint pain.
Wow. Wait, which joints?
I think all of them. That's all she said. So she is, and this is told, well, it might be related, but it's, she doesn't think it is. She's going to physical therapy for some pain between her shoulder blades. She thought it was a shoulder injury from when she was in college.
Oh, how long has she had that?
Maybe four or five years.
Okay. And when was the concussion? That was 2015, 17? When was that?
15, I think.
15. Okay, and there was one other accident she had.
She had shingles.
Oh, the shingles. I remember that. Has she had those come back, or is that just a one-time thing?
She said she knows how to manage her stress.
She knows how to manage it. Okay. And you mentioned something helps depression. Tell me about depression. How long has that been going?
The magnesium. That she noticed that. That I mean, she started taking it not for that, but that's what she noticed, so she's continuing that.
Okay. And how long has she had depression that you've known about?
probably all her life.
Okay. And how have her periods been, you know, since puberty, and what's that history and progression?
Oh, she was regular, and then all of a sudden she's not. She's like, sometimes it might be 2 weeks apart and sometimes more than 4 weeks apart.
Okay.
Sometimes heavy and sometimes light.
Okay. And any other digestive stuff? Constipation? How frequently are her bowel movements?
She says it's not diarrhea, but she goes like at least 3 times a day.
Okay. Not diarrhea, but loose, formed, not formed?
It's poorly formed. It's poorly thin, formed. Thinner than usual.
All right. So is she open to getting additional testing?
Yes.
About what's going on? Because I would want to see, I'd want to see a stool test on her. Because it will show the function, you know, pancreatic function. It'll show inflammatory markers. It'll show bugs. It'll show short chain fat, you know, all the things that it shows. And I think it would be good to have, because, you know, we don't want to just think it's the gallbladder just because she has a polyp there and don't believe the doctor that it's not related. And it can be related, but there may be other things going on. Has she ever been on birth control pills? Is she on birth control pills?
No.
Okay. All right. And she doesn't do caffeine. I mean, I looked at her thing. She's, except for the corn chips 2 or 3 times a week, her habits are pretty clean. She exercises, she gets outside. She does a lot of greens, no alcohol, none of the other stuff. She eats out maybe once a week. No fast food. What's with the drinking tap water? Is it at work or what?
Yeah. She buys me water when I go there, but she drinks tap water at home and filtered water at work.
Oh my. And she's not convincible that she should be. All right. So
I can talk to her some more.
Yeah. Here's the thing. She's got symptoms and you want to remove any stressors that are within your control, right? So I would talk to her about the tap water. Could it be directly related to symptoms? Well, we're not going after chasing symptoms. What we're going after is, what are the imbalances that can be leading to this person to be out of whack? Right? So, yeah. And she's in San Francisco area, and I think their water is pretty yucky, as far as I know. I mean, it's pretty heavily treated, chlorine, fluorine. That affects thyroid function. Do you have tests of thyroid function? You said a year ago was the last time. Did they do a complete thyroid function test?
No.
I would look at all of that, because you want to get to the core of what's going on with her. I would do a complete blood thing with the complete thyroid, with antibodies, etc. I would look at a Dutch test for her, especially given the periods are kind of gone wacky and there's such a big connection between the liver and the gut and the estrogen levels, to see if she has an estrogen dominance, a progesterone dominance. Your girl has an estrogen dominance. I think it's Cassandra that I was looking at that has the estrogen dominance. But those kinds of things are important to be looking at. So those are the things I would recommend if you want to do follow-ups, is as much of the labs that the doctor will do on, does she have insurance that covers?
Yeah.
So then whatever else, get them through Allen Hopkins lab or you probably have a code for that so you can get a discount for her. That's where I would look. I mean, in terms of the stuff she's doing, like, stress is clearly a big issue, right? Does she have a meditation practice, a heart math, a tapping? And clearly she gets stressed, and that could be, you know, she gets stressed. We know that, right? So those are important pieces, and it's so critical to good liver function, liver gallbladder function and gut function. So I think she has to look at that, and I would look at some other labs. Could she be allergic to corn? And the corn, has she always ate corn chips 2 to 3 times a week? I mean, it's been, you know what I mean? Like, It could be an issue that she has some sort of allergy to corn, and that's just enough to keep it going. The sushi in Japan and the fact that this happened a couple of months afterwards, you know, she could have gotten some sort of a parasite from the sushi. And that may or may not show on the stool test. I mean, and sometimes they get these liver flukes and they get into the liver and gallbladder, right? And I know that there's some of those that come from sushi. So it could have been that combination that threw over the edge, the stress with the work. And especially since you showed she never had this before. It was brand new. Hepatitis, but her, you know, you'd know that from her liver markers. So look at the liver markers carefully if she has any elevated liver enzymes.
No, it was all good.
No, and no jaundice or anything like that. Fatigue?
Not really.
No. So just this pain every time she eats, and it comes on. You said it's there all the time, and then it gets worse after she eats.
She feels bloated all the time, and more bloated when she eats.
And is it right away after eating or within a few hours after eating?
I think it's right away because she says, yeah, right away.
Okay. And then does she take any probiotics or eat any probiotic containing foods?
I don't think so.
So those are some of our core kind of things to look at, balancing her microbiome. Looking to see what her pancreatic function is, and that would come in a stool test. So if she's open to doing those would be out of pocket, obviously, because the lab won't, the insurance probably won't cover them. Although Genova gets good results with certain labs. I don't know if she has Blue Cross, but they can oftentimes bill Blue Cross and get coverage, and they will just take a copay from the person.
Okay.
Into Genova. They have the GIFX, I think it's called. Medicare, it covers certain ones of those, quite surprisingly. Genova's got some good technique on for getting them to pay. And if her insurance company is listed in their list, they'll just charge her like $100 copay. And they'll eat the rest if they don't pay. So that's a good thing to know. All right. But definitely, you know, the probiotics, there's certain things missing. Get a vitamin D for sure, because vitamin D is there. Looking at some sort of parasite bug. You know, I hate to just say try this or try that, right? Sure, she could try some probiotics. She could try some, you know, antimicrobial herbal formulation. She's already trying the liver and gallbladder type stuff, and it doesn't seem to be doing a whole lot. It's possible that it's pushing stuff through by getting the thinner stools. It's possible that she was having some block at the ileocecal and it's opening it up and you're getting the thinner stools because they're going through faster. Especially you said she's has three. So whenever you see somebody, you have a nice big thick stool, it's well formed, it's the size of the large intestine, that's what it should look like. Then sometimes you see these pencil thin or thinner stools, that's more the shape and size of the small intestine because it's just hasn't spent as much time as it should in the large intestine to take on the shape of the large intestine.
Okay.
Anything, what's your gut feel?
I don't know, the color of it kind of scared me because then I was thinking that would mean like
occult blood. Yeah. Right. Gut blood. Right. And without looking at labs to see what might be going on, you'd want to look at you certainly can do a really inexpensive test. Go on Amazon and look up GUIAC test, GUIAC. There's several different kinds. That's a brand. But it's just a home test. You test for fecal blood. You send it off to the lab. They analyze it. And they're cheap, like $10 or $20 or something. So I would do that if that's your concern.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's a good call because black stool, black in the stool can be indicative of blood in the upper part of the GI, and red blood in the stool would be more blood in the lower GI, and we start to think like hemorrhoids or fissures or things like that.
And then I had her tell me, so she has, like she won't log her food because that's a trigger for her.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has like an eating disorder, but So I just told her to tell me what she ate for one day, and she agreed to do that because I was worried she wasn't getting enough protein.
Yeah.
And she got like 40-something. She got almost 1,200 calories, and she got...
That sounds, I mean, even though she's small, that does sound lowish.
Yeah.
I would think on 1,200, if that's a typical day, that she would be just slowly dropping in weight. Because I would imagine even at her size with walking that much a day and being active, that she'd be burning at least 1,500.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think she eats enough, but she did get enough protein.
Is she doing enough balance? Can you put it into like, do you put it in a program? Did you put it in like Chronometer?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see how much protein she got. I wrote it down, but I can't find it. But it was like over 40 grams.
Mm-hmm. That should be fine for her size.
46.
If she's absorbing it, right? And then you have to look at, so that's where looking at the protein on the blood test, the protein albumin and globulin, and then also MCV, not MCV, BUN and creatinine. And then just see if there's an indication that she's not absorbing it, which would be a low stomach acid. Bitters, you know, that's something that almost everybody with any kind of a gut issue, because it can stimulate bile flow, it can stimulate the stomach acid, all the digestive enzymes. It's a hard one for compliance, isn't it? Who's tried to get people on bitters? Yeah, it's not easy to get compliance, right? Because you got to remember, I've got a bottle of bitters I carry around for the last 3 years, and it's barely got a dent in it.
Well, she might eat dandelion greens in her salad or something.
Uh-huh. I'm just telling her to do it a little bit before she starts to eat to, you know, let it stew in her mouth and stimulate the sublinguals.
Yep. So her the BUN and creatinine was low last year.
It was. Okay, so that could be an indication of low protein, low absorption, low HCL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting her to do simple things like the bitters can be helpful.
Okay,
so bitters, probiotics, probiotic foods, you know how to tell her how to make those if she wants to make them. Or where to buy them, because she's in San Francisco, it's easy enough to buy.
Yeah.
Cocoyo, various kinds of kimchi. Yeah. Get her to start with a tablespoon a day of it. And also watch how she responds to that. Right? So if you get her to do some sauerkraut, for example, or kimchi, and she said, oh, it makes it worse, you might suspect that there is some SIBO going on.
Right.
Right? And then if that's the case, then just have her take some probiotics, but stick with the lactate-free versions. You know, the Bifido, and then there's a couple of lactose species that are. Yeah. I mean, she can make yogurts with those and emphasize them. The kimchi, also if there's a problem with histamine, then she could have a problem with that. Does she get any rashes or any kind of histamine responses? No.
No. The only, I think it's seasonal, like in the spring, she sneezes constantly, but that's different. That's only
in the spring. So it seems like it's something in the air versus after eating. Yeah. Okay. Questions?
Mm-hmm.
Does that help at all? Yeah. Are you thinking of all the same things?
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's just talking to her.
Well, you could tell her you talk to me, and this is the stuff I recommended, so it's not coming from mom.
Yeah, but she wanted me to. She knows I'm doing this, and she wanted me to.
Okay, she wanted you to. Okay. Yeah. All right, say hi to her for me.
Okay.
Thanks. I've known her since she was 5. When was that? When she was about 5, when she was having some GERD stuff? And you brought her in, and here we got her. That's, she really has, you know. And then I remember when she had the shingles, and I just made of her a list, and she just was like compliant. So she's willing to
Yeah, she will, but she won't take oregano oil anymore. She hates oregano.
Well, you know what? Her bugs might have gotten resistant to it too, because so many people are taking oregano that I see so many bugs that are resistant to oregano on the stool tests. So whenever I think antimicrobials should be rotated, you know, 5 days on one, 5 days on another, 5 days, because the bugs, they, you know, they don't have a lifespan of 100 years like us, right? So they can mutate really quickly. And then if you're taking one thing and you kill off all the weak guys, but these other guys that are left are all the ones that got stronger and mutated so that they are resistant to that. Now you have a whole colony of that. And that's where we get MRSA and all those other things with antibiotics. But the same things can happen with herbal antimicrobials. So if you get the test done, you can actually see what's going on in there. And some of the labs do the sensitivities, but my biggest concern is most of them don't do the sensitivities on the commensals. They'll just do it if there's actually pathogens, but the commensals are problematic if they show up, because it means they're out of balance with the normal flora, and they usually don't do the sensitivities. And that's when I take out my favorite book, is the other one, the herbal, I had the other one here a little while ago for somebody, but the herbal antibiotic, here, you can see I've used it a lot and I mark it for different people, but it's the herbal antibiotics from Booner. And he lists a lot of the weird stuff that you probably haven't put people on, like cryptolexis and alcornia and, you know, some herbs that are not in our normal vocabulary. And you can actually look up and he'll show you different, like, oh, Klebsiella, these are some of the things that Klebsiella will respond to, or this is, you know, cryptosporidium or whatever. I like it a lot.
Okay.
I find it real useful. You can see I mark it up whenever I have somebody that I'm working with, get out their stool test and start to mark up the book and, you know, create a plan of 5 days, 5 days, 5 days, 5 days of things that they normally wouldn't take. Right. And so that having that rotation will help to create that. And and having her CBC will help, because you'll see what her lymphocyte, basophils for an indication of maybe parasites, basophils, eosinophils, but also neutrophils and lymphocyte to see if there's a possibility of a viral thing. You know, and we're talking liver, right? Liver area, there could be some sort, there's a lot of different liver. In addition to hepatitis, there's EBV, there's, what's that one? CMV, right? There's things that can affect the liver and could be problematic as well. And you can tell by your ratios on your CBC. Okay. Got that?
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So we have Cassandra. Hello.
Hello.
So you have a young lady too, 39-year-old, a little older, 5'10", 125, another slender one.
Yes. This is someone who I actually did 2 years ago, did a case study on, and I worked with her for probably a little bit, and then we stopped, and she reached out to me probably March of this year, and then I said, yeah, and she even asked me, oh, don't, are you still in your class? Can you do a case study?
So tell me what's changed since then.
So what's changed since that? Her major thing is she's in March of last year, she was pregnant, and they found out that it was a tubal pregnancy. And when they went in, they removed her left ovary and tube. The upper tube was full of liquid and was large in diameter, and they realized she had endometriosis. She has one child, I think 8, and so she wants to have another, child. And so
She's been trying for a long time.
Yeah. So for the last, I guess since that happened, so going over a year, she's gone to, you know, her OB, even though she wants her OBGYN wants to solve the endometriosis and all that with putting her on some type of birth control, which she doesn't want to do. She's gone to her primary care physician, who feels like it's just all anxiety. And she does have a naturopath that she sees occasionally, but they usually use homeopathic stuff. So she has started, she did do the Dutch test, and that was the thing that I'm not as familiar, but I do, from her symptoms and stuff like that, there seems to be some adrenal things going on, because she, when she has her period, she does feel a lot of fatigue. She feels tender around her abdomen, but what has helped is she's been doing progesterone cream. Mm-hmm. This is also a woman who tends to want to do everything all at once. So we've kind of been talking about, like, her tendency is to, like, okay, let me find the magic thing and do it, you know, and fix this, and really trying one thing and seeing if that's going to work. So she was doing the progesterone and the seeding, you know, where you do the flax seed and the, and so she was feeling better, and so she thought it was more the seeding, but she stopped the progesterone cream and realized this. So this was May, that her period, she started having that tenderness around her abdomen, feeling fatigued, feeling drained. Let me see. She has been doing, let's see. Oh, well, this is the other thing that I forgot to put on there around toxins. She actually grew up on a farm with chemicals growing up, and she does live in a home that was built in 1840 that has probable mold in it.
Hmm. And maybe even asbestos if it's that old.
Yeah. And even some paint issues, maybe even lead in the paint.
Lead in the paint. It could be lead pipes. Okay.
She
Does she live in your area, or is she?
No, she's in where is she? Is it Michigan or Ohio?
Okay. So she's not related to you, because I thought her last name looked like.
No, that. I just put that there. Okay. I always put everybody's last name as mine, so it's like I have tons of people.
We got a lot of Cassandra's relatives out there.
Yes. I put Herbert.
Okay, got it. I was thinking, we're all having relatives today. Okay.
No.
Done. Yeah. Okay, mostly gluten, dairy free. That always makes me ask.
What
does that mean?
Well, she eats it occasionally. Like when on the question on the worst food, she does eat gluten and bread. So at least once or twice a month. She does eat dairy cheese once or twice a month. And she has started lessening her amount of soy. Her worst foods are...
Let's go back to soy, right? Because I'm thinking about I looked at the Dutch test, right? And she has an estrogen dominance. I think she has an aromatase excess. We'll look at that. So tell me, when I hear soy, right? Because soy is estrogenic.
Yes.
So how much soy is she taking in?
That's a good question. I will have to...
Yeah, when you say decreases soy, does that mean she was doing it twice a day and now she's doing it once a day? She was doing it once a day, now she's doing it once a week. So that's an important question because of the estrogenic effects.
Mm-hmm.
And she's definitely estrogen dominant.
Okay.
Okay, and that she's not going to get pregnant, conceive in an estrogen dominant environment. Even with the progesterone cream she's been taking, she's still estrogen dominant and her testosterone's very low. So she's, we'll talk about aromatase inhibitors. And so she's thin, she's not overweight. It looked like she might have a little bit of a blood sugar issue from her labs, not major. And this thing, Albraco DIM, she takes occasionally, DIM and Braco powder. So that's basically like from Hormones Balance. Is that the brand?
It's the brand.
Take magnesium glycine. Okay.
She also, that I didn't put on there, she takes a multivitamin and she takes a mega complete, and she also does digestive enzymes with HCL, with meals when needed. So if she's eating more of a protein rich meal.
Okay. And overall, what's her diet like? How would you describe it?
Overall, she eats vegetable. I mean, she does eat most vegetables. She is a meat eater. I'm not sure if it's organic. I'll have to check with that. Her worst food, she said, was like bean chips and sweet potato chips. Beano chips and the sweet potato chips. But she'll also eat, she likes crunch. So she will eat like kale chips. She will do carrots. So overall, I would say like a B minus with their foods.
You want to find out about the meat, whether if she's doing it organic, just because with problems with fertility and with hormones, there's so many endocrine disruptors in the pesticides, right? And all the stuff and the antibiotics that they're fed, and that could throw off her gut flora. So those are important things to want to know. And then, of course, with the gluten, dairy free, if she's doing it once or twice a month, she's never gone long enough, right, to know if it's going to be an issue. So if you can somehow convince her to do like a 3-month trial and see if that changes her periods and see if that changes how she's feeling and the fatigue and all that, ideally a 6-month trial.
Okay. I think she will, because I think she's very motivated, and the motivation is, she wants to feel better and ultimately, get pregnant. So she's...
Yeah. And the child, the 8-year-old she has, is a natural born child.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause gluten has been associated with miscarriage, recurrent miscarriage, right? Mm-hmm. She's 39. Her risk of miscarriage is much higher anyway, just because of her age. And so anything that's going to increase her chance of miscarriage. The other thing, if you don't know her genetics, if she's got an MTHFR, especially if she's got a homozygous or a double heterozygous, that increases the risk of miscarriage.
Okay, I'll look at that. Actually, she does. I do have her, she does have from sequencing. She has a genetic report from that.
She does. Yeah, I would look at that to see if she's got MTHFR. And there's others that are related. B vitamin status is super important for maintaining a healthy pregnancy and a healthy uterine lining, right? So she wants to get all this together. And if she's estrogen dominant, the progesterone, even if she's taken the progesterone, she's still showing as estrogen dominant, that the lining is not going to hold as well.
Okay.
Right. And the tubal, I haven't found much in the way of what can cause a tubal pregnancy. I mean, there are things like specific physical traumas at the early stages of implantation that could cause the fetus to stop. It could be that she had some scar tissue in there anyway, that she had some endometriosis in there. So the fertilized egg couldn't make its way past and down into the uterus. I mean, there's a lot of different options for that. Mm-hmm. And it could be just a random occurrence, which it does get higher likelihood as women age. She likes to learn new things, learns from others. She does mantras. So she has a mindfulness practice, it sounds like.
Yeah, but she doesn't always trust herself. She doesn't always... and her stress, it's more from, because she says when she's not working, her stress is like a 2 or 3. She's a substitute teacher, and she says that's very stressful, and that's more like a 8. And she says it also sometimes, with her relationships, there's some challenges in her relationship with her husband in communicating.
Okay, so when we look at her lab findings, and we have the report and I looked at that as well. Her vitamin Z is super low, so you've got to get that level up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her iron and ferritin are both low, which is a true iron deficiency. Her MCV was pretty normal, it was like 88. But with iron low, it could be also B12 deficiency as well, that are superimposed on each other. When I see a low iron and a normal MCV, I'm thinking B12 deficiency, because B12 deficiency and folate, B12 and folate, would cause megaloblastic anemia, the bigger cells. The iron deficiency causes them to be small. And if you have both, somehow they look normal. But her RDW was high. And that indicates that there's an issue with the sizes. Like there's a disparity in sizes of her red blood cells. So I would be looking at B12, folate, very important ones for pregnancy and for reproductive health. Iron, you know, I would say, I mean, she is menstruating, so taking iron's not an issue, but I really prefer like Yellow Dock as an iron supplement because it's helping to, number one, supply iron, number two, helps to stimulate the HCL production and helps with overall mineral absorption, and she's got a lot of mineral problems here. So I would suspect that she does have an HCL issue. And then it also helps the liver. So it's a liver support. So I'd be looking at Yellow Dock for her. Definitely vitamin D, definitely zinc and magnesium, right? And then get her on some bitters. Right. And then I'm always going back to basics, right? So, you know, she's only exercising a couple of times a week. If you get her to do 3 or 4, that would be better. But she's getting outdoors a few times a week, out in the sun, you know, relaxation. So any of these that you can bump up would be helpful, right, overall to combat the tendency. You know, if you looked at her genes, she may have a bunch of those MAOs and GADs and all those things that, you know, make a person more prone to be that hypervigilant type, which it sounds like she's a hypervigilant type. She's doing greens, which is great. She's eating vegetables is great. But you don't know about her. Oh, wait, you don't know about drinking greens.
No, yeah.
You don't know about alcohol consumption.
Actually, I looked at that. She says like once or twice a month.
So that's not a bad necessarily, unless she does have some liver detox issues, which can affect.
Right. And the caffeine is actually, no, she's not drinking any caffeine. She just, yeah, she, well, she'll eat some chocolate. That's it, but she's not drinking any caffeine. She'll eat.
Yeah. It's a milder, you know, form of caffeine that's loaded with nutrition versus caffeine in coffee, right, which is very right. My excuse for why I eat chocolate.
chocolate with some sunflower butter, right?
Right, with the butter and then wrapped in one of those coconut things. And,
yes.
Yeah. Remember when we had those in Florida?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
My God. Awesome. No soft drinks, that's good. Sugar, you don't know about, or did you find out more about sugar?
Sugar, she doesn't eat too much sugar. I mean, when I say too much, it might be once or twice, because even with the bad foods, it's more of the salty, crunchy than the sweet. And if she does, it might be a Kind bar or, like I said, like some chocolate.
Yeah. And her A1C was like 5.1, so that wasn't too bad. I mean, that's not bad at all. It's good, actually. Her glucose was in the, like, around 90, but a lot of people, when they go into the office to get it tested, some of the white coat syndrome causes a little bit of cortisol to be produced, especially if there's a bad phlebotomist messing up or whatever, you know, like, just get the blood out of me. And meanwhile, your sugar is shooting up because of the stress. But I would really caution her with the alcohol since she is wanting to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, caution her that you want to eat as if you're pregnant in the pre-pregnancy period. As if you're pregnant, because it's important. You never know when you're going to become pregnant. And you want to have a good 6 months to even a year of really solid, clean nutrition. And you want a good liver. The liver's got a lot of work to do during pregnancy, a lot of work to do. So that would be a good preparation for her. And the tap water you don't know about, and purified water. So I would really, you know, work with her to make sure she is doing purified water. Can't afford to get all those contaminants in the water, especially, you know, when you're trying to get pregnant and have had a tubal pregnancy and all. And the sleeping, 3 times a week, she will sleep through 8 hours or more. So, and that's the tough one. But all of these things are just like, you know, really make sure, always start with all those foundational pieces to make sure they're supportive. So I opened up some of her labs. This was Mahala's, let's see. This was her Dutch test. Let me go to the first page of her Dutch test. Yeah, and there are a couple of things on here. I think I already talked to you about some of the ones I was concerned about. Yeah, so her protein is low. Her zinc is low. Her you know, all those things are low. So I would really be looking at how much protein is she eating. If she's eating meat, then she's probably eating enough protein, but how much is she really absorbing?
Right.
Right. The bitters, stopping, the slowing down, the chewing, the gratitude, all those little things that people just go, what do you tell me something real, you know? But that is real. It's right. So real because it's so important. Magnesium, alk-phos. So she not only had, she I think she had a zinc test done. She does have some thyroid issues because, see, there's a real big disparity here between her free T4, which is 1.7, which is high, and her free T3, which is 2.8, which is low. So selenium could be super important, but also we'll look at her Dutch test to see where the adrenals fall in there. So the things that affect the thyroid conversion are selenium. Sometimes magnesium is important. So, you know, we already know she has low magnesium, but the cortisol, either high or low cortisol, affects that conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these are things that would need to be looked at. Vitamin D very low. White blood cells are a little on the low side. I'm not so concerned about that. But what I am concerned about is the distribution. Her red blood cells are a little high. I don't see other signs of dehydration, so that would be a watch kind of thing. She has low ferritin, and she doesn't have any other signs of like not hemochromatosis, polycythemia or anything like that. Sometimes it's just a little dehydration. But her hemoglobin is where I would expect it to be with low iron like that. Same thing with hematocrit. But like I said, with MCV, I think it's a little... it's probably indicative that there's a B12 folate or both issue going on. And those are important things to really be monitoring, especially look back at her genes and see if she does have MTHFR and explain to her the connection between that and miscarriage and pregnancy success, and that we need to get those nutrients up to speed. All right, so MCV is normal, but homocysteine I didn't see here. Homocysteine would be one that would help us to see if there's that RDW. So perfect MCV, but high RDW. It's only a little bit high, but it's high. Says that there's a disparity in the sizes, the mean corpuscular volume.
Right.
Monocytes are quite high, right? That's either a recent recovery from some sort of illness, viral or bacterial, or a chronic. So she may have a chronic low-grade infection somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Eosinophils, and it might be a parasite, because both her eosinophils and her basophils are elevated. Eosinophils alone, I suspect more allergy, and there could be allergy here as well. But the combination of eosinophils and basophils makes me suspect she may have some kind of parasite. Has she had any foreign travel? But people get parasites from not foreign travel too. So that's something to look at. And, you know, not only is her zinc low, but her copper is, you know, pretty decent, right? So the zinc copper ratio is higher than I would want it to be. So you really have to get that zinc up. You don't have to worry about the copper because it's fine as long as she gets the zinc up. Okay, so that's that. And then let's look at her Dutch. This page. So her Dutch shows that she has high estradiol, you know, kind of medium progesterone. So she's definitely estrogen dominant. High estradiol, medium progesterone, low testosterone. Right, this is just the overview. We'll look at more detail. But when you look at her adrenals, she's pretty stressed and she's producing a lot of cortisol, her total free cortisol, and she's not eliminating it a lot. Like her metabolized She's not getting rid of it. Yeah. So it's kind of persisting in her system, and that can be creating blood sugar imbalances. Maybe, you know, since the fasting looks okay, but what's happening in between, right? What's happening when she eats her bad foods, right? So if you can get her to do a meter and test, that could be helpful. And her DHEA looks decent too. But everything, like, she's in a hyper, I would call her a stage one adrenal. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Because when I looked at that and I was going through, I'm like, oh my goodness, that she's not metabolizing the cortisol. It's off.
Right, and that's related to, that can be related to thyroid. So okay. We know she doesn't have enough free T3, that she's got an imbalance there, and that can be related to thyroid. So helping her to get more of that conversion happening. But you see, it's a vicious cycle, right? Because the cortisol is preventing the conversion, and then the low thyroid function is affecting the metabolism of the cortisol. So really more of the things that bring it down. You might look at some things like phosphatidylserine or magnolia bark or magnolia flower. Can't remember. Okay. Bark or that. But magnolia, they tend to dissipate the cortisol. She doesn't have any one time. She's following the curve pretty normally, but she's just really high. Yeah. So it's not like, wow, she has this stressful period in the middle of the afternoon. No, right. She's just high. Does she have trouble? No, she comes down pretty decent at night. I would get her doing something like phosphatidylserine or magnolia. We tried to get AdrenalCom, but they seem to have discontinued AdrenalCom, which is a cream. But phosphatidylserine or magnolia, and I would have her take it in the morning and probably midday.
Okay. Now, where's looking up a magnolia, what'd you say, magnolia bark?
I'm trying to remember which one, whether it's bark or flower. Who remembers? Where's Lynn Rose? She might remember.
I think Lynn.
Okay, look and see which one will bring down cortisol.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it flower? Only because I know, like, magnolia is very... can be very calming, so I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's the flower.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking it's the flower. I'm going to skip that one and go here. So this is where we actually look at the metabolites. And so we see that her testosterone's low, but her estrogens are high. Aromatase. So she could have an aromatase excess, and she's converting too much of her testosterone into estrogen, into E2, you know, primarily, right? Mm-hmm. E2 can go back and forth with E1. It can also go to E3. Looking at her genes, she has to have a good function of the CYP3A4 to do that. And if she has a gene SNP in that area, then that could make it less of a conversion from E2 to E3. But the other one is you go from E3, estriol, down to the 16-hydroxy. And the 16 and the 4-hydroxys tend to be more of the dangerous metabolites, mm-hmm. or way more so. But we need some 16 because it does some bone protection. So the ratios that they show here, and this is hard to read because it's black and white, but if we look here, the 4 is decent, right? It's low enough. It's 7, and the range is 7.5 to 11. But her 16 is a 9, whereas we really want to see it higher. And the thing that converts estriol to 16 is iodine. And, you know, I don't know if there's an issue with iodine or if it's low, and iodine load test could confirm it. Getting to eat, you know, some sea vegetables on a regular basis would provide multiple minerals, as well as helping her with that without, you know, overdoing on it. You know, like sprinkling kelp on things, stuff like that. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I'm concerned about her ratio here, and this might help to, you have an estrone is 26 plus 3.5. Yeah, that's 29.53. The ratio of these two to estriol should be 1 or greater in favor of estriol.
Okay.
He's about 2 to 1 the E1 plus E2 over estriol. So that's not a favorable position to be in.
Right.
So that's not going to favor the good growth of a endometrial lining. That could promote, you know, because estrogen dominance is one of the factors that's involved with endometriosis.
Right.
So I would be looking at that. Even though her numbers are high, I would be looking at this aromatase. So let's look at some things that can help with aromatase. So aromatase, plant-based aromatase inhibitors, food-based aromatase inhibitors, saw palmetto, nettle, is a good one. GLA, if she's low, and a lot of people are because they really aren't getting food sources. Like hemp seeds are a good source of it. Mm-hmm. Evening primrose is a good source of it. And if she's doing, depends on what kind of, you said she's doing Omega Complete, and I'm not familiar with that particular brand, whether it's just omega-3 or if it's omega-3 plus 6. But oftentimes I find with endometrial problems and reproductive cycle problems that evening primrose can be an important one.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the GLA. And that would help to reduce this, but still her ratios are off here. So the iodine, and I'd look if you do have genes, look at the CYP3A4. Because both of these, both E1 and E3 will convert downstream to 16-hydroxy, but it's via, you know, well, the 3A4 goes from estradiol to E2 to E3. So if we can look at that, actually, you didn't put the picture in there, but there's a picture further down in this report. Mm-hmm. This one, I have it here. I printed it out the other day for someone, and I was looking at it. Let me see if I can find it. That's from, here it is. This picture.
Oh, yes.
They give it to you in there. And if you were to look, you know, you can look at the aromatase and it tells you what the cofactors are. So, you know, from androstenedione down here down to the estriol, you know, it'll tell you what the cofactors are and what you can do to increase or decrease it. But then when you get down here, the 3A4, things that inhibit the 3A4 conversion from estradiol to estriol, would be grapefruit, noni, and pomegranate. So whereas those might be helpful, I don't know if she's eating them, that could inhibit that conversion. Peppermint oil, antifungals, and valerian. And it don't show anything that increases it, but those are things to look at to see if she has a SNP in that thing and she's doing some things that inhibit it, that enzyme might be you know, a lower activity.
Okay, I'll look at that.
Yeah, I love these charts because it just gives you so much insight as to what's going on and what you can do to manipulate them. So yeah, and even though, you know, I don't think I would recommend right now looking at estriol, I would look at those things we talked about, but redoing this test in like 3 months, you know, addressing the aromatase, addressing some of the other deficiencies, addressing, what did we talk about before? The cortisol issues with, you know, bringing some of that down. Mm-hmm. It could be helpful to do some estriol supplementation, but I hesitate to do that right now because she tends to be high.
Right.
The DIM will pull you more, and that might be why her ratio of 2 to 4 is really good, right? Her dangerous metabolite 4 is low and her 2 is high, and DIM tends to do that. And DIM does tend to bring down all the estrogen. So it's probably not a bad idea, or just the sulforaphane or broccoli sprout powder, things like that would help her to, you know, bring the estrogens down. But I think if the reason the estrogens are down, we don't want to like throw them in the toilet, right? I'd rather inhibit this enzyme that's going, I'm pointing with my finger and you can't see this. I'd rather inhibit the enzyme that's taking her testosterone down so that effectively we're giving it back upstream to the testosterone.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the way I would look at it. She also has very high level of the 5-beta. Most people have 5-alpha dominance. She has more of a 5-beta. And I've seen this. She's probably the third one I've seen. I've looked at like hundreds of these, but she's probably about the third one I've seen with the 5-beta. We know a lot of the things that help support the 5-alpha and decrease that. But when I started to look into this, I think it was on one of these calls. I think it was Isabel, one of Isabel's patients. I'm like, okay, that's really weird. That's the first time I've seen this. And we started mm-hmm. researching. And there's the liver's involved. So a fatty liver. So she has a tendency to fatty liver. Her liver enzymes looked okay on her. I didn't see any red flags on her liver enzymes here. ALT, AST, ALPHOS is low. So it may or may not be, but is there stress on her liver? I mean, if you're sure. saying she was drinking alcohol more, you might be concerned with that. But the environment, right? You just said,
right?
So yeah. her liver is working overtime trying to clear the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, supporting the liver, some sub studies show that, what's the name of that stuff? Resistant starch can actually help reverse fatty liver.
Hmm.
You know, and you can put green banana powder in smoothies. Resistant starch, right? I'd hesitate to have her do potatoes because it may work. You know, the cold potatoes when you cook them and then you put them in the refrigerator 24 hours. But resistant starch might be a possibility. And anything you can do to just support the liver. The yellow dock for the iron could mm-hmm. be a good liver support. Her lipids, I don't remember what her lipids were on here. Her lipids, I thought her lipids were normal. It didn't flag, but unless she didn't have it tested. Mm-hmm. How do people do tests and not do lipids?
Oh, you know, well, how would, the many things that they don't test for.
You know, adding, like just doing a complete is like 2 cents more.
Right. But it's so challenging to get doctors to do, you know, oh my goodness.
When you pick and choose, it costs more than just do the whole, like with the direct labs or with Dr. Hopkins lab. I mean, it's like less than $100
right.
to do everything, you know, and then you add on the extra stuff. So it's beyond me. So we don't know what her lipids are. But look at some of the herbs that are liver supportive and see, read them and just see if any of them like, oh my God, she's like that. Or no, this one doesn't match. So hawthorn berry, artichoke leaf, dandelion, burdock, you know, a little bit milk thistle. She doesn't have a high enzyme, so I'm not as concerned about that. But I mean, really look at those and see what you can do to just give her a gentle food-based support, right? Exactly. Not just more supplements that she has to scarf down, but how does she incorporate a lot of this stuff into her food?
Okay.
And then if we look at her last page, her MMA is at the high end of the range. So my suspicion about B12 deficiency mm-hmm. is confirmed here. Mm-hmm. So we want to look at the B12. I would see if you can get her to get a homocysteine the next time she gets blood tested, right? The full stuff.
Right.
But it's at the high end of the range. So there is an issue with that. And that's an important nutrient for blood cell maturation, which is an important nutrient if you're trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
All the others are, this epinephrine, norepinephrine metabolite, right? We just talked about, is she a hypervigilant? That is slightly above range there. So it's possible she has like a COMT or, couple of the dopamine type metabolites, you know, there's some possibilities there. If you looked at the genes,
I think I can't recall because I kind of lived, but I think she does that. Yeah. To be prone to those.
Now, if she has a COMT, that's homozygous, be really careful given her methylated Bs.
Okay. So which is that
COMT.
Okay.
Okay, heterozygous is fine, but homozygous, you've got to be careful. I'm careful anyway, even if it's heterozygous, I just go slow. I usually get like, with bees, I'll usually get a liposomal, in drops, and then just have them start with one drop, then two drops, then three drops, and really caution them. If you start to feel anxious, if you feel like you're biting people's heads off and you're yelling and screaming at people and you're getting more stressed out than usual, you're taking too much back off. Mm-hmm. Right. And in the meantime, if she does have a COMT homozygous, I would just start her with like a hydroxy or even an adenosyl B12. Okay.
Yep.
Any questions?
No, that was good. I was thinking some of those things. That was really good. Good. Very helpful.
Yeah. We have a lot of Dutch cases in the files.
Okay. Probably
almost every one of these calls has a Dutch. A lot of people have heard a lot of Dutches, and you know, the more you do it and the more I go through it and the more you hear it, the more fluid you get with it.
That was it. Cause I was going through it and some of that stuff was coming up for me, but I was like, well, I'm just not sure. Let me see. But after looking at some of the stuff that's on the Dutch website and some of your stuff and everything, then I was like, okay, I think this is it. But
I mean, the more you look at it, the more it gets, you know, kind of natural to you. But even then, like, we're like, oh, this is weird. What's this about? This chart is invaluable. I'd like to, I wish I could just get it bigger because it's so hard to read. It's so tiny, but I'd love to have this bigger so I can just like have it hanging up somewhere. And because I review it a lot. I look at it a lot. And then looking at, let me turn my light on in the dark now that it's getting dark. We didn't have the page with the cortisone on it, did we?
What did I send? Let me see.
I didn't see that page. It's usually between.
Oh, daily free cortisone.
Yeah.
No, I think, did I put it in? Maybe it's page 5.
Well, I think you can do it. 5-8. Cortisol is metabolized.
Oh, you know what? Because I can tell you what it is. I have it. I know what it was.
You can only upload 5 pages.
Yes. And so I was like, oops. So what do we need?
I want to know the kind of the ratio between cortisol and cortisone.
Cortisol and okay, so cortisone.
Which one's higher?
The cortisone was 485. The free cortisol was 256.
Okay. Yeah, so if you look here on this chart, it gives you some of the things that will push towards this way or push towards that way. So that should give you some more clues. So if she's got more cortisone. That doesn't make sense. Hyperthyroidism. Sleep is important. Magnolia. We talked about magnolia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then the THF, and it talks about that too, and the 5-alpha, 5-beta. Let's see. For excretion, this process is primarily increased by obesity, high insulin, and hyperthyroid, and maybe slowed in cases of hypothyroidism, anorexia. Yeah, so that's where the metabolites on the first page were lower, and it's slowed by hypothyroidism, anorexia, or poor liver function. So we're seeing that liver thing come up again in multiple places as well. Liver and thyroid are important here, but you know, looking at her gut, certainly we didn't ask you anything about how's her gut and how's her bowel movements and all that. That's critical to make sure. And especially since she wants to have a baby, like really, this is not about going from imbalance to balance. It's really going from imbalance to optimal.
Right.
Right. Because we really, if you want to support a baby and you're in your late 30s, then, you know, you really have to get your body in the optimal shape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. Excellent.
Thank you. Good case. Yeah. Anybody else have comments or is this good? Is this helpful? Is this confusing? Angelica, as our newest member, is it good to keep hearing it over and over? What do you think? I knew
it hasn't set in yet. But I don't know. It's like a foreign language. You have to hear it a lot in order for it to finally make sense.
And when you get yours back,
Yeah.
And we're going through yours, then it's going to sit and it's going to settle. And if you, or if you submit a case of your own, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then all the stuff you've heard, like flying by you as foreign language words, like, oh, agua, water. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're probably right.
And just let it just get in there. Let it just settle in there. The subconscious brain is such a brilliant thing. And it just like stores into its database, you know?
Very all right. True.
So we next have, this was Mahala's. I didn't get so far to look at yours and Mahala's. I'm going to get rid of these. All right. And then I have this one, which is Mahala is the next one. And then yours is the last one. And you didn't have any labs. So you should go quick. So Mahala. Okay, where are you? There you are.
Here.
Mahala is, this one's one of those, you know, challenging. I've done a lot of different things. And what is the little thing that we're missing here? So let's just see if we can see some hole that you go, oh, ooh, I hope, right? And what other tests? I'm going to open up the other tests because I just opened up the, we've got a SpectraCell. We've got an ELISA. What is this one?
That one is no, the iodine.
Mahala. Okay, good. So this is a good variety of things. And what's this one? Oh, even the Cyrex.
Yeah, so it looks like Klebsiella is there. And then possible Lyme. But that's not conclusive because it's just one standard deviation.
Which one was this? This
it's the Borrelia.
Yeah. The I'm saying which panel was this? Was this like?
It's RA12.
RA12. Okay. Yeah. So you're reacting to Klebsiella, cytomegalovirus, and Borrelia. And that is one of the Lyme co-infections, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's one thing that makes me think that that's a potential positive, really, is because I have a lot of pains that just come and go. They rotate around my body. I might have a day when I'm completely fine, and then tomorrow I'm in so much pain I want to cry, and then it goes away. So that seems to be a Lyme thing. But
now here's the thing. You did this a year ago. So what have you done since?
So I actually did, I had tried a few times to kill the Klebsiella, and it keeps coming up positive. And so since then, I actually used digestive enzymes to break the biofilms. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a couple of months along with bactericidal stuff. So it feels as if my gut feels better. So maybe that worked, but I haven't retested since. So
have you done a stool test or GI map or any of those kinds of tests?
Did I ever do one on me? Yeah, I did. And yes, I did. In fact, I did a U-biome as well. And Klebsiella keeps coming up.
Okay.
So this is blood, DNA, and then the stool test also showed Klebsiella.
Okay. So when we look up Klebsiella, I mean, I don't know if you've ever used or heard of cryptolepsis. This is what Bruner has found to be super helpful with Klebsiella is cryptolepsis and alcornea, A-L-C-H-O-R-N-E-A. But it's also important, you know, to support the immune system, right? To support your body's natural abilities to support, right? So to get rid of. I would love to see, I don't know if you've done it, but reishi mushroom can be good for that.
Okay.
I'm even thinking maybe astragalus just as a, you know, as a immune tonic support, but I would look these up. I'm just saying these, but you look them up, read about it and see if, you know, if it seems to fit, you know, your constitution and your type when you look at it. That's what, and then with the Klebsiella, if you haven't already tried the Alcornia and Crypsolepsis, and then whatever others you can come up with. But I would do it on a rotation basis, because if it keeps coming back, it's probably resistant, which is why you might consider doing dual tests where they do sensitivity.
Right.
See what it responds to. But you could pick some things that you either haven't done before or you haven't done much of before, and then take about four or five of them and do them on 5-day rotations. 5 days one, 5 days of another, 5 days of another, and then start at the beginning again. Because you want to keep these buggers guessing.
Yeah.
So you want to create an inhospitable environment. What about your microbiome in terms of good guys? You know, the lactobacillus, the... bifidobacter.
Yeah, my bifidobacter is not doing, it's not optimal. So that's what I'm doing actually right now for probiotics. I just do bifido.
Like the custom probiotics.
Right.
How much do you take?
I actually do yogurts. So I just try to, I make my own yogurts with it, and I try to have that every day.
Are you opposed to doing a 7 to 10 day blast with it? Like, I mean, blast, like, I think one of the big scoops is like 400 billion.
Okay.
You know, and maybe do 400 to 500 billion a day for 7 to 10 days, and then just go back to doing, you know, taper it back off and then do your thing.
That's 1 to 2 scoops basically.
Yeah, it's between 1 and 2 scoops. Yeah.
Per day.
Yeah, 7 to 10 days, and it'll kind of blast it out. I mean, blast it in, right? And try to crowd other things out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of really great studies and results with doing big, huge amounts of probiotics for a short period of time and then going back down to maintenance. Because the yogurts are probably fine for maintenance, but if you're not at maintenance when you start, you're going to maintain at a low level.
Right.
It may not go further down, but you're not going to necessarily go up.
Right.
Makes sense. So, and then you got one virus, and then you got the Borrelia. And let me, the same guy has a Lyme disease book.
Yeah, I have his books on that.
And what have you done to address these? Have you?
None.
Nothing?
Because at first when I did this test, they were like, oh, this might not mean anything. You need to retest. And I just felt like I don't have the money to do it.
That's the thing, right? Don't retest until you do something.
Right.
So, and then don't just do something and not retest.
Right. So
my feeling is pick a time period, 3 to 4 months, that you are going to go at this full force, and then you retest.
Right.
And you go, okay, look, we shifted this. This is better. This is lower. This is still high. Maybe we need to, you know, up the ante on this particular one. But we also don't want to just be in the environment, in the business of killing bugs.
Right.
Right. We want to create, like, why are these guys growing out of balance? Right. And if these guys were tested in your blood, this is a serum screen.
Right.
That means these guys have penetrated through, the antibodies to them have penetrated through the gut, which means leaky gut, right? So you've got to look at what do we do to heal that lining of the gut.
Right.
And if you've got toxic exposure, which these guys will produce toxins, right? I want to look at your oat in a minute. But if these guys will produce toxins, and those toxins are going to impact your detox pathways, and if your detox pathways are impaired, then your liver says, let's put more fat in. Thus, the inability to lose the fat.
Yeah.
Right?
So after the last, when I actually included the biofilm thingy, that's when I did my last stool test from Ubiome, and Klebsiella was not there for the first time. So that's probably taken care of, but
and let's look at the markers in your oat test too.
Yeah,
when you did the biofilm disruptors, was that like serrapeptidase and things like that?
I used the Digest-4F from
Claire.
Standard process MediHerb. So it's a combination of bitters in there. And I just took high dose. I think it was like 5 or 6 of them on an empty stomach. And then 2-3 hours later, I would take the...
After you started that. I usually, when I do it, I'll do like a head start, like 7 to 10 days of the biofilm killers before you actually start trying to kill them off, because otherwise you waste your time. And then you do them together. I continue to do the biofilm disruptors, do the antimicrobials, and then taper off on the biofilm, and then taper off on the antimicrobials.
Okay. I did this for about 2 or 3 months, so maybe.
Yeah. And here's the thing that we all need to really own up to and just accept that it's part of the thing. When we do a test for somebody and then we give them a protocol, we got it. We owe it to them and ourselves to retest.
Yeah.
Because you can't just go, oh, well, I don't know what happened. Because then you waste their time and money doing a protocol and you don't know if it worked. And doing the test doesn't mean you failed if there's still stuff showing. It means that, hey, wait, we need to either change course, shift things, do the rotation, because sometimes they just get, they're really good at mutating, right, and getting resistant.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So that's the one test. Oh, the Hakala. Let's see.
Right. So this one really puzzled me because I think I had on my Dutch test, I had the same thing where E3, there was something within E3 and 16-hydroxy, and you had recommended I do this. And basically, it just shows that my body takes all that iodine as if I don't have enough, but then it excretes it all. So what they thought, I called the lab to ask them what that means, and they said that it just means iodine resistance. And I'm like, great. Now what do I do for that? So they're like, just B vitamins and all that. So
yeah, and you do have some bromine toxicity, right? You go from spot of 1.3 to 24 hour of 3.56 on the iodine. So the iodine, is it displacing some of the bromine?
Was that, I didn't get it. Because to me it seems as if, so I had, it was pretty low, and then after 24 hours.
It was higher. So it meant that you taking the iodine will cause the bromine to get displaced.
Okay.
And so that's a good thing.
Is that, I don't know where I would get that from, because I haven't eaten any gluten in like...
Yeah, but bromine comes from, I mean, it could be hot tub. It could be old exposures, like, you
right.
know, bread when you were a kid, you know, eating that Wonder Bread every day builds strong bodies 12 ways and causes lots of bromine toxicity. Some hot tubs are chemically treated instead of chlorine with bromine. So you look at the national average for bromide is 1 to 2 milligrams for 24 hours, and yours was 3.56. So yours is almost double the upper end of the average, right? And when you look at it at spot, it was only 1.3. So there's almost triple what you're doing. So you've got a bromine buildup, and this could be part of the issue too. That's going to affect thyroid function.
Okay.
And that can affect weight, right? Your body goes, oh, we're going to slow down here.
Right. So historically, I had some thyroid problems where my T3 was low. So then I did a bunch of taking care of my liver, and on my last test, that was normal. So,
okay, good. So you've been moving in that direction, but there is definitely, you run the risk though of mobilizing this and then causing issues like with the thyroid, because now it's in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So whenever you're doing something, if you were to decide, okay, I'm going to try this iodine flush thing, like for a month of just doing 50 milligrams of iodine like you did here to try to flush out this, because this is good because you got rid of a bunch of it. But okay. you want to make sure that you're taking a lot of vitamin C, but not with your iodine because it can disrupt the absorption. But lots of vitamin C to help latch on to the bromine and take it out. And then salt, it seems like salt in the water helps. A salt flush, they call it. Helps with bromine, helps to get rid of the bromine. Your chloride is high too. Look at your chloride.
Yeah, that's probably from the water.
Mm-hmm. Are you drinking just filtered water now?
Just filtered. And I actually now have a filter on my shower, but if I take a bath, it's there.
So you don't have a filter on your shower, but the bath water is?
Right, because I don't have a whole house thing.
Yeah.
So and I have a shower and a bath, so they're separate.
So the shower has the filter and the bath doesn't? Or?
Right.
Okay. But if you take a bath, you're sitting in it.
Right.
Right. All right. And does the bath have a shower along with it, or is it just, it doesn't. So you can't fill it up from
the
clear water. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because it's chlorine, it's bromine, you know, fluoride isn't bad. But it's still there. There's some stored because it increased after taking the iodine. So whenever you see an increase in the halides after taking an iodine dose, it means that your body is, the iodine is going in and displacing it, popping it out. So I tend to think, it's just, if this were mine, if I were you, I would experiment with like a month of, I would maybe build up to it. When you took this test, did you feel yucky? Did you feel like, oh, no, like you got hit by the ton of rain? Did you feel better, more energetic?
Yeah, I felt better.
Yeah. So I would go with the 50 milligrams a day, but also bump up your vitamin C, like triple what you're taking right now. I mean, go to bowel tolerance on vitamin C, but not at the same time as the iodine. And then I would look at the salt flush and just look up like Dr. what's his name, the one that wrote the book on iodine, Brownstein, and the other one is the other one he talks about all the time. I would look up what the specifics are for the bromine, the salt flush for bromine toxicity, and see if you can do that. And just make sure that when you're doing that you're having 3 bowel movements a day, right? You're keeping your bowels moving. You're drinking plenty of water to flush this out, because most of it is going to go out in your urine. So drink, lots of drink to get it flushed out. Because this could hold some keys to why your body's not not getting the weight off, because you're storing toxins.
Yeah.
This will take some load off your liver. Okay, that we had your... Why is this one?
That's this. Yeah, we've talked about that one.
I know, but I'm looking for the... I thought I had your... I was looking back for... Okay, so... Look at your...
The Eliza looks like I put my son's instead of mine.
Oh, whoops.
So ignore that one. But I can tell you... I can tell you what...
Okay, give me a second. Let's look at the organic acids. It doesn't look like it from a perspective of yeast and fungal markers. I don't see anything elevated. I don't see any bacterial markers in the stool. So it could be, because this was almost a year ago that you did this. This other thing showed me, right? And this when was it? This is more recent. It looks like you might have really gotten rid of the Klebsiella already. Right. So I would be retesting that. Let's see. Your oxalates are a little on the higher side of the range, but nothing that I would, the only thing I would say with those numbers, I wouldn't suspect a genetic hyperoxaluria. I looked at somebody today and her oxalates were up at like 250. There I would say, and then we looked at some of the genes and she had them. But I wouldn't suspect that, but I would just, when you're doing your greens, just don't favor like a lot of spinach and chard. You know, look at more arugula and dinosaur kale and the lettuces and things like that, because the others are higher in oxalate. But these numbers aren't terrible. They're still within the range. They're just at the upper end of range. Just don't want to add that to your issue. Pyruvate, lactate, you know, again, it's still within the range. It's just on the lower end of the range. I don't think that's an issue. Your Krebs cycle, I always like to look at the Krebs cycle. I have this printed because I can't memorize all these cofactors, guys, as smart as you think I might be. So I like to look, when I'm looking at the Krebs cycle, is I like to have a picture of the Krebs cycle. You can get this in module 2. And, you know, I'd highly recommend that a lot of these charts, you just print them out. You put them in some of those clear sleeve things, stick them in and have them in a binder near your desk. Whenever you're looking at these, you just flip through, because we need these. Charts are invaluable. So when we look at the Krebs cycle, that's what all this, the mitochondrial markers, right? We look at, I don't see any major stuff here except the aconitate being low, and then the citrate and the oxalate, they're not even high. So let's see where the aconitate goes from citrate. So it goes citrate, aconitate, oxalate, glutarate, or alpha ketoglutarate, malic. Now it's up here. These guys are out of order. Darn, I was hoping they had them in the right order. So if aconitate is low, that conversion from citrate is higher than the others, but it's really not super high. You just might need some overall Krebs cycle support, because they all are on the low side for producing energy. And you have said that your energy doesn't tend to be where you want it to be.
It's been okay, actually. Four years ago, I started with like stage 3 adrenal fatigue. So now I'm comparing everything to that. So now I feel like I'm super.
Yeah, you feel like you're on fire.
Right. So I feel okay. I started actually about a month ago taking some multivitamins from Perk, and the difference with this multivitamins is that he includes all the salts, all the Krebs cycle salts. Mm. And once I started doing that, I really felt way better. Mm. So I think at this point is just the inability to lose weight and the pains that I have, mm-hmm. that are like killing me.
Yeah. The pains. So what are you, like, how inflammatory? What's your diet? Like, what's your breakfast, lunch, dinner?
For the longest time, I tried to do intermittent fasting. And that's another thing. The last month, I actually got thing on my hand, the lifestyle, whatever that it's called, for blood sugar. And when I do intermittent fasting, in the morning, my blood sugar goes up. If I eat breakfast, the blood sugar stays low, which I don't get it.
So your body is mobilizing stored glycogen. That's raising your sugar. Okay. It could be that your body's perceiving it as an emergency, that it's going down and it's stimulating the gluconeogenesis. And right. that happens to some people. They're like, well, I haven't eaten for all these hours. Where's the sugar coming from?
Right.
Or your muscle. It's like breaking it down to make new glucose. So in that case, like, not everybody's meant to do intermittent fasting. So that's probably not a good idea. It's a good idea for you to do it.
So I started eating, and usually I eat either some kind of yogurt, which is something I make because so it's without sugar. Or I have
a non-dairy yogurt.
Non-dairy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been, because of the LRA, I have severe sensitivity to the all dairy,
And so because of that, for the past 6 months, I took all the dairy out and all the eggs. What's the
difference in your pain levels?
Minimal.
Minimal, okay.
Yeah. It's still, as I said, I have good days. And when I hurt, I hurt. And then without doing anything new, I just get better. And then 3 days later, I'm in pain again. It just seems to be really random.
Look at addressing the Borrelia, if you can, because that is a real classic sign with Lyme co-infections.
Right.
Look at, you know, your anti-inflammatory nutrition. How are your omega-3s?
Low. So all my DHA, EPA, all of that is low. My arachidonic is up, and I have the lipoprotein A is high. So I've been working on that. And the blood sugar. I noticed certain foods will, like, for example, if I have white potato, I go up to 130.
Yeah, so you leave that out.
Yeah, so.
Try where you put it in the fridge and let it get cold and try it that way as a resistance.
Okay.
And just see if it's a difference because you've already measured it without. So just by putting it in the refrigerator for 24 hours and seeing.
Yeah.
And if not, just leave it out, right? Yeah. Anything you see that, you know, now that you have the meter, you can look. Yeah. Anything that you see that raises it, get it out. Just get it out.
Right.
For now, right? You can always add it back.
Yeah.
You know, once you get balanced, but I would definitely get it out. I mean, there's nothing terrible showing on here. You know, there's a few little imbalances showing on your organic acid, but nothing that's like, wow, this explains things. I mean, the only thing they flagged was the aconitate being low.
Right.
These others are at low ends, low normals.
Yeah.
I would tend to be thinking low stomach acid and low absorption. Let me look at what your vitamin mineral markers are. How was it on SpectraCell? I haven't looked at that one yet.
Yeah, so I had, 4 years ago, I was deficient on everything. All the Bs, all the A, E. And right now, the new one from this year is basically, I think, the Bs are much better, but A, E, coenzyme Q10.
That's the one I was going to recommend for the Krebs cycle. And also here.
So I've been supplementing that for the past 3 months or so.
When did you get this test done? Is that before you?
Was before, but it was this year. So it was like in February, March, something like that. And, so it definitely looks like I need to, the blood sugar somehow got out of control. It's the interesting thing. I think it's all stress related because, when I started measuring it, I was running between 75 and 85, like on a really bad day, it would be 95. And then I flew to Europe, and from the moment I landed, my blood sugar never went below 100. And then a lot of foods would just, so I was kind of scared.
So now you're back, right? And you can get into a routine. And I would do the 30-day metabolic reset. Nothing that makes your blood sugar go above 110 passes your lips.
Okay.
All right. You're not in any level of ketosis. So I don't know if you're certainly not in anywhere near ketosis. So look at the levels. They're very low.
Right.
When you look at that, test your ketones, get the ketone meter and see if you can just maintain at least a low level, like a one, you know, 0.9, 0.8, 1, 1.5, anywhere from that range of ketones.
Okay.
Right. And the intermittent fasting, in the morning, your sugar goes high when you don't eat. What about spacing the meals like 6 hours? Are you okay with that? Or does the sugar start to rise?
Yeah, it seems like when I have breakfast, my blood sugar stays. So I kind of took it as like my body thinks it's an emergency. It's some stressor.
What's your cortisol in the morning? Have you done?
Yeah, my cortisol was high, so
That's going to cause your exactly. So for people who do have high cortisol, just this is an overall thing. If they have high cortisol in the morning, don't have them intermittent fast. If they want intermittent fast, have them do it at the other end of the day.
Okay.
Because they need that and they need protein. They need some source of protein, whether it be your yogurt or a green smoothie or hemp seeds or, you know, something that would have protein so that the cortisol then will break down the protein in the diet to supply the blood sugar. And it's much more efficient than going to the liver and or the muscle and starting to break that down.
Right.
Yeah. So anybody that has that high cortisol in the morning, they should not be fasting in the morning.
Okay.
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 Yeah. So that goes for you. So if you did want to go back to two meals a day, you'd probably be doing breakfast and then, you know, a later lunch and then skip dinner. That would be the better way for you to look at doing it.
Okay. Yeah. So I do a lot of, right now, actually, I'm doing a 10-day liver whole body detox with a lot of smoothies. So I all like healthy stuff. So 4 days I will not be eating anything but the smoothies.
Good.
Just because I thought like after all this travel to detox.
Okay.
And then after that I was thinking to do a Lyme protocol.
Yeah, look at, if you have Bruner's book, he has, you know, he has all the different herbs and you can just play around and read about the herbs and see which ones really resonate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the liver, I think the liver thing is good because you need to support that liver.
Yeah.
CoQ10, vitamin C. You probably take vitamin C. You take but overall, nothing really major. The CoQ10. But CoQ10 is a high value means a deficiency. So really, the CoQ10 is not, because this is a metabolite of CoQ10. Your methylmalonic acid is fine. So your B12 is probably fine. Ascorbate, I'm not worried about that. You're taking it. Glutathione could be higher.
Yeah.
It's zero. NAC, right? So think about whether you do, you know, something with more of the methyl. And acetylcysteine, glutathione. I always like to do precursor things.
Mm-hmm.
You can get NAC and just put it in a smoothie, or you can get MSM and put it in a smoothie. It may not be quite enough. And that could help with gut repair as well as liver. This is not a good indication of amino acid status. We're always just looking for high, meaning, you know, an inborn error of a metabolism. So there's nothing really there. But I mean, this is like one of the cleanest oat tests I've ever seen, quite frankly.
That's why for me, I was hoping to find something and I'm like, okay, I guess it's good that I didn't find anything.
Yeah. So. And this is a blood test. Oh, this is your son.
Yeah, that's my son's, unfortunately. But mine, that's pretty much what I found, is the dairy, and egg whites and a bunch of gums and things like that, which were from me attempting to have some gluten-free stuff on occasion. So clearly, I like 4 years ago when I did a food sensitivity, I was sensitive to everything. So I know I have leaky gut. I've been working on it, but for some reason, I'm just not responding as fast as I would love to.
So what are you doing to heal the leaky gut? What have you tried to?
I've done a few things. I tried L-glutamine. I tried high doses. I did not feel well with that.
Did you look at NIPS before? Everybody, here's the thing. Everybody's telling people to take glutamine. Do not put people on glutamine who have a tendency towards anxiety or hypervigilance unless you look at their genes and then you go really slowly.
Because
people with a lot of GADs do not do well with glutamine.
Right.
Arabinogalactans tend to be good because they feed the short chain fatty acids. some of the demulcents, depending on, you know, how you tolerate them. Some people don't tolerate a lot of the mucoid stuff, but the demulcents like marshmallow and slippery elm and things like that.
Can we put slippery elm in smoothies, or it has to be on an empty stomach?
You can try. You know, if it's going to thicken it up and slime it up and let it sit, you can try. I usually have people do it, but I mean, it could be okay. I don't know. I've never tried it.
Okay.
I usually just have people take it, because a lot of times I have people take it, or I'll take it because they're like, oh, I got a cough. I got a tickle in my throat. Clunk, slippery elm, gone. Oh, I just drank too much ginger juice. Clunk, slippery elm, gone. I've done that a few times. I love ginger. And then I'll, you know, juice a piece that big and just drink it down and go, what was I thinking? Quick, slippery elm to the rescue. Yeah, so you've got these markers,
mm-hmm.
cardiac markers.
Yeah, so the CRP, I had it at about 3, 4 years ago. Then it went down to 0.5 and now it's 6. So I'm like, yeah. I do have a lot of muscle pain, so maybe related.
Have you got any other antibodies? I see your thyroid antibodies are pretty okay, but
yeah.
Have you done any others?
I haven't looked at any others. So
Thyrex, I would maybe look at some of the collagen and other antibodies related to the musculoskeletal system.
Okay.
But I would, you know, in general, just address it. Address the leaky gut. Address any latent viral or bacterial infections. Look at any heavy metal stuff.
And that's the other thing. I had a ton of mercury fillings. They've been out now for 15 years or so. But when I took them out, the dentist did not follow any precautions of any sort. So... and that kind of coincides with when I start feeling sick, getting worse.
Have you done any heavy metal testing, a urine challenge, urine test, or?
I didn't, no. I try to do some binding, and every time I do that, my joint pain gets really out of control. So,
What kind of binding, like EDTA or something like that?
I did what is it called?
DMSO, DMSA? DMPS. But more of an oral or suppository or?
Oral, and it was
modified citrus pectin?
Like the creolites. I can't think of the name of it. Zeolites. There you go. Thank you, Janine.
And you did that.
So I've done that. And
when you've done that, were you moving your bowels regularly?
It was challenging. So I actually had to help it.
Yeah, an enema.
I wasn't all that successful. So, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, before you start or put anybody on anything that's going to bind toxins and yank them out of storage and get rid of them, you got to make sure they're having 2 to 3 bowel movements a day. They got to keep that bowels moving. Otherwise, they're just pulling stuff out of storage, circulating it, put a load on the liver, store it back. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's important. The one I find to be the most gentle, it also takes the longest, is modified citrus pectin. Because it just very gradually pulls things out, binds them, and gets rid of them. Still need to have the bowel movements happening.
Right.
So if the bowel movements aren't happening, then you got to help it along, whether it's an enema or, you know, an intestinal movement kind of formula.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to do it like horrific, like the stuff that puts you in major spasm either. You don't want to just do like pure Senna or anything like that.
Right.
Because it's just too strong. Energetics, I think it is. Has one called Colon Clear. And I just found again that the Health Force Nutritionals, they didn't have the intestinal movement for a while, and now they do. And I take that when I'm doing a 5-day fast, like right towards the end, to keep things going, because otherwise it takes my bowels a few days to get started again. And I just think about all the recycling. I don't want that happening. So I use that, and it's very gentle. And it also has some liver support in it. So you may want to look at one of those.
Okay.
And then I would do it before, I would do it in advance of starting anything that's going to bind. So you're making sure that you're moving, and then start slowly with anything to bind. And I would say, look at the modified citrus pectin, or if you do have the zeolite, just slowly with the zeolite, not major, and make sure that you're eliminating.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because if it's making your joint pains worse, it means it's mobilizing toxins and they're floating around in your bloodstream.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your body's inflamed and trying to get rid of it, and the CRP is going up as a yeah, so results at a glance.
How do you address LPA?
LPA almost never goes down much. You have to address the lipid problem around it. So total LDL particles, buoyant HDL. Where's the dense LDL right at the top? So these look okay. These look actually really good. So it's just the LPA and the CRP. I would address the inflammation.
The homocysteine.
CoQ10 is another one. CoQ10 and omega-3s. Niacin will sometimes be helpful for that. Hawthorn as a cardioprotective. Hawthorn berry. Do hawthorn berry tea. You can put it in smoothies. And that would be a supportive of liver as well. And your leptin's high, which means you probably have leptin resistance. That's contributing.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the particle number. Watch the video that I did. It's on the advanced section of the cardio module with Alan Hopkins. You can also find it through the ACR, the Advanced Clinical Resources, Dr. Hopkins, and he went into a lot of detail. And then my talk in that module also goes into a lot of information.
Okay.
He talks specifically about the protocols that he puts in place. I mean, he talks about baby aspirin. I don't agree with that. I think, you know, use omega-3s and use you know, peptidase or nattokinase or natto, to help get those protective effects. But CoQ10 can be super important. There is a CoQ10 NAD supplement that supports Krebs cycle function from Seeking Health. There's also I had a hard time finding it recently, CoQ10 PQQ liquid from Apex. And then leptin is super important, like the meal spacing, good breakfast, even more so, right? We talked about earlier having breakfast, not doing intermittent fasting with high leptin. It's not a good idea to do intermittent fasting. You want to get the leptin under control. So spacing your meals and all the good stuff.
Okay.
No meal, no food late at night. It doesn't look like you have a lot of you. So the panathenic is low, and that's important for adrenal function.
That's important
for you, sex hormones.
Yeah, I actually, at some point, I was taking just B5 by itself, and that's when my cholesterol actually went down and my hormones went up. So,
because it's in that conversion pathway from cholesterol to pregnenolone. Factor which requires it.
Right.
The carnitine helps get fat into the cells so they can burn it for fuel. And if you're low in carnitine, you're going to have a disruption in that.
Mm-hmm.
Borderline, but still. Manganese is important for joint repair. And if you're having some joint pains, the collagen formation. Do you do any kind of like the collagen, like the Sun Warrior collagen protein or the other one that just came out, and it's plant-based, But it's all the cofactors that your body needs and all the amino acids it needs to make good collagen.
Okay.
And that might be helpful for those joints. And of course, zinc, like zinc has to be kept up.
Right.
And addressing your glucose, we talked about cysteine. Had showed up with NAC on your organic acid. You're showing up with cysteine here. So looking at what are foods that contain cysteine. Probably more of the brassicas, if I'm not mistaken. I think so. Look up what are the good food sources of cysteine. I love the Chronometer app because when you put it in and then you hover over one of the nutrients, it'll tell you what foods in your diet have how much of it. So if you're looking at, oh, I'm low in cysteine, which of the foods I'm already eating that have good sources of it, and how much more of that can I eat? And if it says, oh, I have to add an extra cup of broccoli or an extra cup of cauliflower or whatever, it just makes it easy because it's right within the scope of what you're doing already. You just know, oh, I'll just eat another cup of that or whatever. Just wrote a really good book on E, and he's talking about tocotrienols and not necessarily rice tocotrienols from, what was the plant? Let me find it. It's quite interesting. I got the book on Kindle. And it's from a particular plant that he found to be like the best tocotrienols, which is the best to give you the vitamin E. And it's an interesting book and a lot of good science in it. Of course, he's trying to sell his product, but so is everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you just always have to do your own due diligence. Where's my Kindle? Ah, there's Kindle. It got moved. I'll look for the name of it and give it to you, but it was certainly... I think I got it for free on Amazon or whatever the thing is that you, okay, so, the oxygen, the truth about vitamin E, Anato. Anato is, let me see about this book. Anato tocotrienols. Certainly, and he has, read it because he really talks a lot. He talks about pains and he talks about the cardiac. It's certainly worth looking at. The truth about vitamin E, let's see the exact name of the book. Truth about vitamin E, the secret to thriving with Anato tocotrienols.
Okay.
Okay. Because that's the only one that shows up as that in the
right.
Insulin interaction show up as deficient. Oh, good. Here's the Krebs cycle picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is the step. This acetyl-CoA is a step in the conversion from cholesterol down to pregnenolone.
Mm-hmm.
And you were low in aconitate, right?
Yeah.
Interesting picture. Yeah, and you're showing up with a lot of Krebs cycle issues here, more so just in terms of the vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of these are going to be helpful. You might look at some sort of formula that has Krebs cycle support as opposed to taking all of them individually.
Right.
This is interesting. They've got this is a new report. I haven't seen this
it
before.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So there's where your cysteine goes to taurine. Taurine, you said mentioned an issue with fats. Taurine is a precursor to bile acids.
Mm.
So you may not be making enough because you don't have enough cysteine. Oh. So look at the cysteine issues. Wow, this is a nice report. I'm going to have to look at the, this is new. Because it used to give you this list of here's what you're low and here's what you're high and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, people walk away and go, okay, I guess I got to take this, that, and the other thing. But this is really showing you where it's impacting your function. It's impacting your Krebs cycle. It's impacting your methionine cycle. This is part of the, and your homocysteine. We don't know what your homocysteine is. Oh, no, your homocysteine was 7.2, right? So I think with these supports, you may help to push the homocysteine around here. And then the cysteine would cause this to back up and the homocysteine maybe stay high because this pathway is backed up. So I think addressing the cysteine and the B12 can help address your homocysteine. And, it, you know, of course, B6, B12. B6 is here, right here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right here, B6. Right. Yeah. But it looks like B12 versus folate. Right? Yeah. Okay. Did we get it all?
Yeah.
All right. Any questions? Is that helpful to anybody? Was that just like too much? Was helpful?
Yeah, for me it was.
The more I go through them, the more I learn. So, and the more, you know, the more I teach it, the more I learn. So thank you for that opportunity. And how about we do really quickly look at yours to see what we can tell you, Angelica?
Sure. Let's. I didn't cover the name, but it's, I think it'll be all right. Oh, well, maybe it's not on there.
Somebody else. Is it for you or somebody else?
Oh, yeah, it's for somebody else.
Okay. I don't think you put the name in.
Oh, okay, good.
The male, 27, 6 foot tall, 192 pounds.
Yep.
Employed, single, no kids, brain fog except fullness after meals, excessive thirst. Mm-hmm. So what do you start to think when you hear about excessive thirst? I mean, just
I immediately thought of his blood sugar, and he got a meter, and he's doing it with me. He's my roommate.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's going to start to measure his blood sugar, and I told him, like, all the, like, values he should be looking for. So he's definitely starting that. But he said that his top goals are really clearing the brain fog and getting this his fatigue under control. And he feels like every time he eats something, it's Russian roulette, whether or not it'll, like, lay him out and make him so fatigued because his stomach is so full. Or it'll give him horrible, debilitating brain fog, which makes even driving like difficult.
Mm.
So he so they what thirst
is the typical diet before you started intervening.
Yeah. So he said that the things that bother him the least, meaning they don't give him as much brain fog, are meatier, starchier foods. So he eats a lot of eggs, like chicken sausage. I see him eat like breakfast potatoes and like tortillas. He eats like vegan cookies or bars. I did convince him to get some green powder, so he bought chocolate amazing grass. So that's like, yeah, he said the blander his food, the better he does. And he does eat some green vegetables in the form of like frozen green beans. I'll see him eat those like a few times a week.
But does he get worse with greens? I mean, has he tried sitting down to, you know, a big plate of greens? He does. He feels more foggy.
You know, I don't know if it's like he feels more foggy, but he says that, well, yes, actually. He said the more colorful the food, the more it tends to, he thinks, it give him brain fog. But he said he's had brain fog his whole life since he was a kid. And interestingly, he has an identical twin who also gets the brain fog, but not as severe. His twin actually gets more of the stomach upset. So they've got similar symptomology, but like varying degrees of it.
Yeah. So I would tend to think there's something going on with his digestion. He may have some like oxalate sensitivity or salicylate sensitivity. A sensitivity to some constituents in those foods. Our module 11, I think it is, 10, something in that range is the food, I call it the food religions, but it kind of goes through that in terms of, you know, how to determine what they may be okay with. So I would tend to think I would want to have him take a detailed diet diary, symptom diary. And exactly like at 12:57, I started getting brain fog. It was a 7 out of 10. By 30, you know, whatever, 2 o'clock, it was this. And really keep it. And I would keep it separate because he's going to try to make sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, here's my symptom log, here's my food log. And then you can help him look, put it together. Go mm-hmm. Here's where your brain fog got high. Let's look at what you were eating over the last 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want him to be like, what's the word? Changing the interpretation by biasing it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Anyway, because I think people tend to do that. Well, I'm fine. But you can look and go, look, every time you got the brain fog 3 hours before, you had one of these burgers or these English muffins or whatever. Has he tried going gluten-free?
You know, I never asked. The only thing I know is that he did try veganism and he lost weight very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. Especially when he gave up processed sugar, because he was like a junk food vegan, and then he gave up processed sugar and he just lost so much weight. So that tells me, huh, that's weird. Like, no matter how much he was eating without that sugar, he just couldn't keep weight on, and he got down to like a very, like what he said was almost hormone debilitating, because he said he lost his testosterone, he lost his sex drive, he lost everything. And so that's when he went off veganism, because he felt so bad being underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting too is sometimes he says he can eat foods for a while. Like, he was eating sweet potatoes a bunch past couple weeks I saw him. And then he said all of a sudden one day his body will just freak out when he eats it and he gets horrible brain fog, and then he'll stop. Like, so it seems like he keeps getting triggered by foods after he eats them for a little while.
Right. And what does that indicate to you?
Leaky gut.
Yeah. So he likely has leaky gut. Ask him about his antibiotic use over time.
He said only a few rounds in his life. Not too many, according to him.
What does that mean?
He says he could remember just a few rounds of antibiotics his whole life. And the last one was in college. That was several years ago. And he says he thinks it was for an ear infection or something.
Okay. Yeah.
He was not breastfed. He at all. He doesn't even know if he's the older twin or not. His mother never told them. he said he'd
that matters much.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm just trying to give any details.
But the lack of breastfeeding, you know, didn't get the colostrum, didn't get the protective organisms.
Yeah.
You know, when was his first round of antibiotics? Kids that tend to have their first round of antibiotics below the age of 3 will have more of a tendency to have atopic conditions and inflammatory and autoimmune conditions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he does have horrible allergies. And when he was a kid, he had it really bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because not breastfed, was he Caesarean or was he natural birth? Do you know that?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know what his birth.
Those are some things that matter, because Caesarean, they're less likely to have gotten any transfer of any organisms from mom. And then if they were not breastfed, they didn't get any of that. They pick up, Caesarean babies pick up whatever, their natural flora becomes whatever was there in the OR when they got, you know, emerged. And then on top of that, not getting breastfed. So he may have a big time messed up microbiome. So you might look at, you know, some simple things, like either you might not be best to do it with food with this guy, is to just get him to do some basic Bifidobacter, just real simple, because you don't know what the state of it is, and just try that. Brain fog is related to ammonia, you know, ammonia buildup, right? So what's going on with his liver, right? What's that doing?
Yeah.
The liver, the brain big time. And then those pathways, which we had on Mihaela's, I don't know if I still have it up. Do I? This pathway here. Okay. Down in this area is where the ammonia gets produced.
Okay.
Right? So if he has any genetic SNPs, and does he find that eating sulfur-containing foods makes it worse? Garlic, onion, brassicas, right? Ask him some of those questions.
Okay.
Some issues here.
Just sulfur.
Yeah. Is he open to doing any testing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would be the top test you would recommend for this individual right now?
Yeah, I would want to get his diet cleaned up as best I could.
I know. But he says like the worst thing is the brain fog. So he's like, it's
luckily the green powder's fine, but he's just, he had this fear of food because of how it.
I would make sure that if he's, the meats that he's eating is organic, that he's not eating, you know, breakfast sausages and that kind of stuff, organic meat.
Right. Yeah.
Chemicals affect the liver, affect, and that's big time with brain fog.
It is.
It's big time, right? And then on the what else does he do? If he's doing the starches, right? See what his blood sugars are looking like, right?
But, okay. Yeah.
You know, they're on the side of resistant starches. Don't make the potatoes, throw them in the fridge, take them out, reheat them, or turn them into potato salad.
Okay.
That makes a difference. But see if you're seeing any hills and valleys. A lot of times people who get this brain fog, it's really just like their blood sugar dip. You may have an excess of insulin.
Right.
To look at too much insulin, and then he's getting this big dip and he's feeling it as brain fog. Ugh, you know? And the carbs can actually just keep it, you know, if it's high insulin, then the carbs are actually, they may be triggering it, but they're also buffering it, right? It gives the insulin something to latch onto, something to work on, versus he's just eating vegetables and he has a hyperinsulin. Like, look at his fasting insulin. If he has a high fasting insulin and he's eating just vegetables and there's not a whole lot of need for insulin, that insulin is going to clear his blood so fast and he's going to get those dips. So is he having highs and not lows? Is he having highs and lows? And that will give us an idea. So if he can chart that out, it could be really helpful.
Okay, definitely. Yeah, he did say he was open to doing those labs. So that would, because it's only like $200, I think, or I don't know. But yeah, okay, that would be good.
Yeah, I would definitely get his A1C and his insulin.
Okay, check A1C. And
also get C-peptide. That's a little bit more expensive.
C-peptide, more expensive. Okay.
But the insulin is a good indicator.
Okay, so if he has too much insulin, that means...
That means his body's gotten used to making a lot of insulin over time because he's been calling on it to do that, right? Eating a lot of carbs and processed foods and all that stuff.
So yeah.
Vegan and eating, you know, the cookies and all that. And then he's making too much.
Mm-hmm.
Making too much, but he's not eating, you know, foods that require the insulin. He switches his diet. Now he's got all this insulin, but he doesn't have any foods that require the insulin. He could be having crashes. I'm just guessing right now. That's why measurement is so important.
Right, right. Well, okay. See if there's anything else. What do you know about a feeling of restlessness? That he said he's felt that also as a child, and it kind of has gotten better, but the feeling of restlessness and brain fog at the same time.
Like restlessness in terms of body twitching, moving muscles.
Yeah.
I would look at magnesium as being a possibility, magnesium, calcium imbalance. It may be an epinephrine thing.
Okay.
It could be a hyperthyroid thing. So those are kinds of things I would look for in a blood panel to see.
Okay.
Where it might
go. Okay. So
anything else? Okay. Can you think of anything else that might cause that feeling of restlessness?
He said he had it ever since he was a child, and his parents didn't believe him that it wasn't his like own doing. They thought he was like hyperactive. He said he literally just couldn't control his restlessness after eating. And he seems to think it has to do with the food, but who knows?
I would look at oxalate sensitivity. Because oxalates yank a lot of the magnesium and calcium out of the body.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on what foods, if he's not eating high oxalate foods.
Yeah, he wasn't raised eating high oxalates. I mean, he ate a very sad diet. Very, very sad. I mean, he told me it's all the stuff you'd expect.
Magnesium deficiency is very common in a very sad diet.
Yeah. Okay. It
helps to see where the tendencies go. Right.
Okay. And just so you know, I did the digestive assessment with him, the symptom one, and his highest score was in the small intestine and pancreas section. That was the most imbalanced.
So if you want to just give him some stuff to see if it calms symptoms while he's, you know, I would look at digestive enzymes.
Yeah.
I would look at probiotics. I wouldn't do probiotic foods at this point, because we don't know, does he have histamine sensitivities? Does he have any other kinds of sensitivities?
Okay.
So I would do probiotics of like a, the custom probiotics has a D-lactate free, which has a couple of strains of lacto and a couple of strains of bifido, or just straight bifido. Something like that until we know more, especially with the pancreas and the small intestine showing up. There may be some SIBO going on there.
What do you call that probiotic? Custom?
Oh, custom probiotics, either the D-lactate free.
D-lactate free, okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
And the enzymes. And
enzymes.
Yeah, looking stomach acid, because if, you know, extra magnesium, I'd certainly try the extra magnesium, you know, even just magnesium oil at bedtime, try that. And then, you know, do it during the day, or just taking an extra magnesium, buffered magnesium.
Okay. And one more thing about just about stools, because I know it's important, the stools. He says, like, he doesn't seem to like it when he eats more fibrous things, like more vegan or veggie food. He doesn't like that it makes his stools, he says, like toothpaste. Like, it just keeps coming out, and it's, like, sticky. And whereas when he eats his SAD diet, like he eats now, it's like, firm and dry and, like, a puzzle piece and chunky. But he seems to think that's more normal than the alternative. And they're always lighter in color.
Yeah, lighter in color gives me a clue. Does anybody know what lighter in color might indicate?
Well, I thought fat in his stools.
Well, lack of fat digestion, right, fat in the stools.
So I don't know. But he said it's not shiny or mucousy or sticky. It's just light color.
Light-colored stools is a sign of biliary insufficiency.
Biliary insufficiency? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a gallbladder issue.
Things like the bitters we talked about. So some really basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really basic stuff to help his digestion. Bitters, digestive enzymes, probiotics. It sounds like, you know, just a general prescription. But given that, it could be a good place to start.
Yeah.
If not dysbiosis, that can affect his brain, which can affect GABA, which can affect, you know, that hyper, kind of the inability to relax.
Oh,
so be what it is.
Oh, affect brain.
So sometimes you can just start with, as you're working with people, let them know this is just a temporary thing that we're going to do to give you some relief while we're working on what's the real root cause. I would say bitters, probiotics, enzymes, and omega-3 fats. You can't generally go wrong with those four things as a starting point. And then a lot of times they get some results and you go, look, this is just, you know, let's just work out, well, why is this happening? Let's see if we can clean this up.
Mm.
And microbiome can be a biggie. He's only 27, so, you know, he's more likely to be able to fix it more quickly, but he's also had this his whole life. So he's had it for 27 years. So it's like a 53-year-old who developed a problem when they were in their mid-20s.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, lack of, and, you know, moldy environment. Did he grow up? Where did he grow up? Did he grow up?
Arizona. No, so not likely. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll get him started on that. I think he would definitely be open to that. And then we'll consider the insulin test.
I would definitely see if he can do just a general blood test. And then you're at least moving in a direction of what might be going on.
Right? Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
All right, guys, we've been at it for 2.5 hours.
Thank you. I'm ready too.
I have 3 or 4 hours of work before I go to sleep. Oh, all right. Anybody else have any questions? Let me stop my share so I can see. Anybody else have questions or comments? Was it useful? Most of you just, you know, it's great that you stayed on. Karen, you've been on the whole time. Was this helpful? Learn a lot, even not your case. Yeah, Janine. Martha's been on the whole time. Brandon, hey, Brandon. How you doing? Helpful at all, Brandon? You there?
He was commenting. It's helpful. Yeah, he was.
Okay, good. I don't look at the chat. Oh, my God, 99 comments in the chat. I haven't seen any of them.
Oh, and we love the chat.
I don't, you know, because I'm, like, so busy getting into this stuff, I don't ever get to see the chat. Anything in there I should? Just curious as to what Jerry's talking about. Brain fog can come anytime. If not breaking down protein or ammonia builds up, low iron, lactobacillus. apple cider vinegar. Yeah. So those are all good things. And we can, I think, look at, you know, it's hard to know when you don't have any labs on somebody. I'm not a big fan of like, let's jump in and get every lab going, but at least I want to get a starting point of some basic blood chemistry to see which stuff looks off. And then for the, in this case in particular, I would definitely want to see insulin.
And he doesn't drink, does he?
No, he doesn't. Doesn't drink caffeine either. Good boy.
Good.
Yeah, he's probably a little on, you know, the probiotics and stuff. So
I'm very interested in his birth.
So I think the stuff, just those basic things, can help, because we talked the bitters will help with the stomach acid. Probably throw in some zinc there.
Okay.
To help him to make more stomach acid and get absorption, and that will help to jumpstart his digestion. And then you can get them to do some of the cleanups, because if somebody doesn't buy a cleanup and they get crappy results, they feel worse, then they don't want to. But if you can get them to the point where they have some of their functions restored, and then they do the diet cleanup, then they can feel even better.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Good job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My first case.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Little by little.
Little by little. And you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And learning all this stuff is like, but then when you see how you can start to put, and you already, you know, just the answers you had to a lot of stuff, it's like you're thinking, right? You're starting to pull it all together. And the more you do it, and the more you get people to practice on, and the more you dig in and you get cases, the better. Valerie, anything you want to add?
No, but it was really interesting and very helpful.
Oh, good. Yay. All right. All right, guys. Have a great 4th of July. I don't think I'll see you. I don't know what's going on tomorrow.
Tomorrow is the IRSPT thingy.
Oh, yeah. I have to I can't go to bed. I have to create a presentation. I just pulled it out of my head. I'm going to talk about insulin resistance and thyroid, and now I have to actually
do the thing. Well, you're good at execution, so.
I've done it. I've done so many presentations. Like, if you could see how I put together a presentation, I open up like, okay, maybe this one. I open up maybe 10 different slideshows, and I go, should I throw them all in one? And now I have 250 slides, and I go, that ain't going to work. What do I want to say first? 3 hours later, I got a presentation.
Oh, Lordy.
Rock on. Sending you positive creative energy.
I'll tell you, the funniest one that I had was I was being interviewed, and I thought I was being interviewed for, it was Jessica Drummond for her pelvic health class or whatever. And she wanted me to talk on, I don't even remember which, hormones and something. And I got on and I thought it was an interview, like most podcasts and things like that are interviews. So I just talk off the top of my head. And she says, so do you have slides to share? I'm like, slides? Was I supposed to create a presentation? Yeah, I thought you were going to do a presentation. I said, oh, what do you want the presentation to be on? And she told me, I said, okay, can you wait 5 minutes? And I went, blip, 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 blip. And I did a presentation for her. And because I had it, right? That's the thing. Doing a lot of different presentations. I could just pick and pick and pick and pick and just, they didn't know from what, you know?
Yeah. You got your arsenal.
You did your first presentation for me, fixing up that presentation. You did a great job.
Oh.
Thank you. All right, guys. That was a good one. All right.
And all right.
Have fun over the 4th of July weekend if you're doing anything fun. My son called me up before and invited me to go to lunch with him. I want to take you to lunch tomorrow, Mom.
Oh,
me to take him to lunch because he was out of money or something. He was like, oh, I want to take you to lunch. I'm like, wow.
That's cute.
That's sweet.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.